This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Booksplode, Pluto, Urasawa X Tezuka, Volume 1. Fanboy Booksplode. My name is Connor Gilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Lanigan.
Hi.
And this is the Booksplode show, where we talk about a graphic novel, a trade paperback, a collected edition, and it was unlocked by the patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy. This month is a bi-monthly show, every other month. This month, a much shorter read than the last Booksplode, which was, Josh, if you recall...
I'm literally going, I don't remember what it is.
Jack Kirby.
Oh, yes. This was a much shorter read than that. Yeah. I did this one in two sessions, and I did that one over a period of 12 months.
Right. This is Pluto. Pluto, Urasawa X Tezuka, Volume 1. That's how it's released in the United States. This is the first volume of the much-heralded Pluto series. I believe it's a eight-volume series, Josh. Is that correct?
Nine.
Nine-volume series.
I think. I'll...
I'm going by what I've got listed here is eight volumes.
That might be right. I have not. I have read all of these except for the last one, which I bought many years ago. And the reason that has nothing to do with whether I liked it or not. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, gets away from you sometimes.
This is a manga series that was released in Japan from 2004 to 2009, and in the United States, 2009 to 2010. As mm-hmm. I said, it's an eight-volume series. I read it in two sessions, but I could have read it in one.
Oh, yeah. At one point, I actually stopped on purpose because I was like, all right, because otherwise I'm going to be here for another 20, 30 minutes and I have to go, but I wanted to keep reading.
I was so tired. Yeah, that was the thing. I read it before bed and I was like, I need to pay attention, and I went to sleep. And the next night, I read through it pretty fast. But this is written by Naoki Urasawa and Takashi Nagasaki, illustrated by Naoki Urasawa. And just to baseline this, we are not manga experts. These are big names in manga, but I couldn't tell you why.
I could, because I read some of the stuff about them, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to try to explain that. You can all do that on your own.
But this was a big deal when it was announced, because these are big names in manga, and plus this was a reimagining of Astro Boy, the classic the classic manga series from Tezuka. So this was a big deal when it came out, that these two giants in manga were reimagining one of the all-time, you know, most famous manga series.
He's their Jack Kirby.
Right. So I've been wanting to read this for years. It's been on my list of things to read. And did we give a spoiler warning? I don't know. It's so hot.
Let's go for... There's definitely a spoiler warning we're going to talk about. But at the same time, we're only going to talk about this book. I won't spoil anything that comes after it.
Well, good, because I haven't read it.
Right, exactly. So your spoiler warning really only applies to volume one.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like this thing is chock full of surprises. It's world building. So I don't think we can ruin it for you.
I'm going to compare this book to Unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it makes sense when I do that. One thing I was very pleased to find and this is such the cliche American thing, I didn't have the manga headache that I was afraid I'd have, which
yeah,
I had when I read Project X Challengers way back, however many years ago that was, all those books, Cup Noodle and the Dotson one. It's just my, you know, you're reading it backwards, your brain wants to go left to right, the pages and the text and the word balloons and the panels go right to left. And in the first time, a couple times I ever read manga, I got a headache from reading it, but I didn't have it the problem this time.
To that end, I'm going to go ahead and say right now, this book is chock full of left-hand panel stacking, but it's not a problem at all. So, I mean, it was like every page.
The story of Pluto is that, you know, you're in a world where, and it's a very international story. It's, you know, a lot of manga, almost all the manga I've read is, takes place in Japan, but this takes place in like Sweden and Scotland, and there's a bit in Tokyo. You're in a world where the robots are commonplace in society, and there are like 8 great robots in the world, but for various reasons they're the great robots of the world, and someone is killing them. It's got a very Watchmen feel to it.
It does. I actually noticed that a little bit at one point. So I read this, God, it was a long time ago. Like, I might have still been in New York, so that's like a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I had started it, and it's interesting is that the only thing I knew about it was that a lot of people seemed to like it.
Right.
Almost so that when I went in, I thought it was maybe a little overcooked in terms of how great everyone thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
But now in retrospect, I'm a better reader now. I keep saying this is funny because I feel like I've been reading comics for a really long time, and, you know, critically for a very long time too. And I can come back to stuff now and I'm just like, how did I not notice how great this was?
Mm-hmm.
And so coming back to that, I guess some amazing cartooning in here.
There's amazing cartooning, and there's some really amazing use of the medium.
Yes.
This might sound silly to some, but I was really impressed with the sound effects.
Yeah.
Which I thought were very evocative of real sound. There's one point in the middle where the main character, his name is...
I don't know how to pronounce it.
I kept calling him Gestalt in my head. That's probably not right. Where he's running. He's sort of running through like a deserted, like, I don't know, building. And mm-hmm. the clack, clack, clack of his feet was just so evocative of that sound of hard-soled shoes running against like concrete, and it echoes. It was just that sequence where it's just clack, 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 clack as he runs. I just was immediately brought into the sense memory of that sound. I found that a couple times where the sound effects were really quite incredible.
Yeah, that's true. There's a really good, really good use of that stuff. I mean, you had mentioned the sort of reading, the left to right.
Mm-hmm.
It was fairly effortless with this. I mean, really, the storytelling is so strong, the way that it moves you through the page. I mean, like, it is high-end quality comic book storytelling. And that's just to start with. After that, you've got, you know, I think people have an idea about what manga is going to look like in terms of character design and in terms of sort of what you're looking like. And it, I don't think this is that thing. I mean, it is elements of it, but it's surprising. This could be, you know, I wouldn't look at this and immediately like, this is a Japanese comic.
Well, the thing is, manga just means comics in Japanese.
Right, yeah, no, totally.
So there's a style that, just like the American comics have a style, Western comics have a style. Mm-hmm. You know, may not all look exactly alike, but they have a style to them. And so a lot of manga has a style, but it doesn't mean every manga looks that way.
And
this could have been any book you're reading any Wednesday. This is, first of all, this book looks terrific. I don't think we haven't really hit that point home yet. We're talking about the art. I was so impressed by the art. The
character design of the humans, like, you can tell all of the people apart. There's, you know, all sorts of different types of humans, and then you get into the character designs of the robots, you know, and that's fantastic.
Some of those robots broke my heart.
The little sad lady robot.
The wife of the robot, the wife of the cop robot, who she kind of looks like the robot from the Jetsons.
Yeah.
She has no facial expression. She's not a humanoid robot. Some of these robots look like humans, and she doesn't, but her unmoving, unhumanized face was so heartbreaking as he had to tell her that her husband had been murdered.
Same thing with North Number 2. You know, like, he has no facial expressions. He, you know, but his posture, the way that, you know, the way that he has that dead look in his eyes, you know, and the way that he's speaking, like, I don't know how, but you can hear these people speaking.
It's funny. I thought North Number 2 was a woman until about halfway through that segment. I don't know why I just did. Or a female robot, but not a woman. In addition to Watchmen, there's a very heavy Blade Runner vibe through this, in which... Yeah. You know, you meet this investigator, Gestalt, and...
I'm going to go with Gesicht.
And he's investigating the murder of this famous robot, one of the most famous robots in the world, Mont Blanc. He's a Swedish robot, and someone has killed him, or he's died, and they're trying to... He's like an Interpol investigator, but he looks human. He is, for all intents and purposes, human, and then you finally it's revealed he is a robot too. So that's sort of the Blade Runner-esque, you know, portion of this, where it's this like a replicant style robot in a world full of different kinds of robots. So there's a lot of influences here. None of it is aping.
No.
And it has the foreboding murder mystery sense of Watchmen, of like a world at an inflection point that Watchmen is sort of. Mm-hmm. Things might be changing in this world, and we're watching the reasons why.
It's really good.
I thought the tone of this was terrific.
What did you expect?
I didn't know what to expect. I mean, I knew...
Did you know it was about robots, or...?
I think I did. I knew the Astro Boy thing. I don't really know Astro Boy in and of itself. But I didn't really know hardly anything. I basically walked into it mostly blind.
I'll tell you one thing that I love and always have. I don't read a lot of science fiction that would back this up, but I'm always fascinated by the robot rules, the Asimov robot rules, and how just across fiction, many, many authors decide to just use that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the robot, I think there's three or five. The basic point is that, you know, like a robot cannot hurt a human.
Right.
You know, and that is a rule in this that the robots all keep saying. Now, that's Chekhov's gun situation. You know, there's going to be, and then there's one robot who has hurt a human, and he's got a whole Joker vibe. Another great design. You know, he's a pile of broken parts that's kind of held down, and he's got
he's been stabbed through his chest, and so
a Hannibal Lecter kind of thing in the cage, but also sort of dangerous because of the way that he speaks.
Very Hannibal Lecter. Give me your memory chip.
The other thing that I think when we were talking about the art is that anytime there's a scenic shot,
mm-hmm.
you know, like an overview of the castle or a field or the city, like they are all, we've been talking about that, like with Liam Sharp in the Green Lantern ones, where he'll draw like the city spacescape or whatever. And these are all right up there with that. That's sort of, or the inside of the house.
Great use of gray tones and grayscale.
Yeah, it's not in color. Other than there's always, every book has a little bit at the beginning.
The first couple of pages, and I wonder why.
I don't know. They're all like that. And I don't know if it was originally published like that or not. I actually like it better in black and white.
Yeah.
I mean, it really.
It's more evocative in black and white. It feels like a noir.
Yeah. And it's just done so well in that way that you don't need anything else. Like, it's got depth. I don't know, man. It's the kind of cartooning that at times you realize how dense and detailed it is. Mm-hmm. And at other times you realize, like, wow, there's actually not a lot there, but they're accomplishing a lot with it.
Yeah.
I get now. I must have understood this, but I think I understood it was really good before, but I don't know that I was enjoying it as much as I did this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is one of those things, you're like, oh, this is, every time I turn a page and look at it, all the things on that page are perfect.
Right.
You know?
All the lines need to be there.
Yeah.
Now, does it make you want to read the final chapter?
It does, but it doesn't make me want to read everything in the way to get there. I mean, it does. I do want to read it.
It would take you about a week.
Probably. But here's the thing.
You got to read about ships, big mass ships.
Yeah, I have a lot of books here.
You got to read about submarines.
It turns out that I'm always reading comics,
right?
And so
you only get like 3 days to read for yourself.
Yes, exactly.
I know exactly what you mean. I'm reading Hamilton right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be 40. I was about to make a joke about being 45 when I finish, but that's not so funny. I'm going to be in my 60s when I finish reading that.
I've been reading Chernow's Washington book for most of my adult life.
We're not going to talk about these books right now. We'll save for the Media Explode. So here's how I found this like unstoppable, which if you listen to our most recent Media Explode, you'll understand why I'm talking about it. It moved at like a breakneck pace through mm-hmm. the whole story, and then all of a sudden it just ends. Now I realize this is not like a self-contained story, and it's chapter one, basically, of eight. And so it's like it's almost supposed to be like a cliffhanger, but I felt like the ending wasn't so much like a cliffhanger as it was like confounding. You know, Gestalt, what is it?
Gesicht.
Just call him Harrison Ford. He goes to Tokyo.
I think he's German, and if you were German, you would probably be like,
he's German.
It's not hard. Yeah.
So anyway, he goes to...
Someone's going to tell us.
He's in Tokyo, right?
Yeah.
And the soccer ball bounces past him, and a bunch of kids run past him, and then there's like a kid kicking rocks.
Look at the cartooning on that rain, by the way.
Oh, it's beautiful. And then a kid picks up a snail in the rain, and Gesicht says, "You're Adam, aren't you?" And the kid says, "That's right." And that's the end. I don't know the impact of that. I assume this is the Astro Boy part of it, but not knowing I don't have any context for why that's a major.
That's who that character is. And I think if you are, you know, a Japanese comic reader or you know what that means,
mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that was a big oh wow moment.
Right. And that's just not me having the context. Sure, that was the only thing that kept me from being like, this is a 5-star book, only because I was like, Oh, well, that's an ending.
He's the other character, but it's just a chapter ending. I mean, it's, you know.
I am a little bit knocking it, but not really.
I complain about that in, you know, mainstream comics all the time, is that, like, the final page reveal is something that doesn't mean anything to me. Right. So you're right. It doesn't have that impact if you don't know what it is. Or it relies on the reader to sort of be able to interpret it. But I do think that in this case, you know, that would be like a page turn and not know who Superman was.
Sure.
You know, like.
I'm only knocking it in terms of I wanted to love it all the way to the last page, and I loved it all the way to, like, the second to last page. And I did not love the second to last page. I just didn't know what it meant. So that's all. That's just my own failing, and when I pick up the second volume, I'll have more context, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is worth it as a thing. I really like that I could come, because I think back when I read it, and I liked it. I didn't love it. But this time reading through, I don't know, it really just connected me. It's a fast read. It's not a thing, but...
It's a very fast read, but it doesn't feel like that was it. Like, it's a very meaty, fast read. You know, you're getting a lot of story here. Because, like, he starts off investigating the murder of Mont Blanc, and then... Or the death of Mont Blanc, and they think maybe it's a natural disaster, but he's not so sure. And then it leads him to another death of a robot with similar clues, and he's sort of on his own, and it leads us all around. And then, actually, the most intriguing part was... The North number two, it's sort of like the side bit. You know, it's almost like the Jeremy Irons parts of Watchmen. You know, it's like we go to Scotland and spend a good chunk of the book with these two characters, North number two and his, you know, quote unquote master, his human that he keeps charge of. And they were fascinating, and their relationship was fascinating, and their whole arc was incredible. I didn't mind it. At first, I was like, well, so we're just going to... I mean, because I'm holding the book right now, looking at the pages. We're looking at, like, almost half the book you sort of leave and go off on the side story, which is not necessarily a side story, but doesn't involve the other characters we've been previously. And I loved that bit. I just thought it was terrific. Their growing relationship was great in it.
It was, and it does give you a lot of clues on sort of what came before and what's going on. I mean, basically, what we're seeing here is sort of the burgeoning of AI.
Right.
You know, and these robots who were, you know, built as tools, and a lot of them were used in the wars. I think, what did they call it? The 39th? Whatever war that was. So, like, that gives you an idea just by that name.
How many wars have been,
Wars. Like, what's happened. And then, you know, that the robots afterwards, like, they have regret. You know, we don't know anything about Gesick, really.
Right.
I do. But, you know, there's going to be a lot more there in history. He's definitely got that brooding melancholy thing, you know, that shows. And you're like, well, there's something else going on here beneath the surface. And North number two, he's got that weird thing where, like, he won't answer the question about how many robots he destroyed or killed. Like, so he's carrying that around with him. And then, so that sets the tone for the whole thing. It's really interesting is that Mont Blanc, you never meet him. He's not in the book.
You see him in flashbacks, but you see him in, like, other, like, commercials and tributes and stuff.
But by, like, the time they're talking about him, you hear all the people, you know, describe him. You know, it's like, man, I wish I'd met him. You know, like, it's one of those characters, like, that's a really cool character, and we never even met that character. Then you get to the end, and you have the wrestling guy, who looks like the most manga out of all of these. You know, like, he's driving the yellow line in Voltron, you know, and he's making bad decisions. And you're like, don't do that, you're so happy.
Mont Blanc is like the anti-comedian.
Yes.
You know, he dies in the very beginning, you only meet him through flashbacks.
He's Hollis Mason.
So Mont Blanc's like 15 feet tall, and he wears overalls, which I love.
Yeah.
He just seemed like a cool robot tech. What I think about this book is that it's a great intro for people who maybe are apprehensive about reading manga. You know, if you're a Western comics reader who's never read manga before and don't, you know, are sort of not nervous, but you don't know what you're in for. It's just comics, it's just the opposite direction. I think Pluto's a very familiar story for people. I think you'll really like it.
It's really easy to read compared to a lot of sort of standard American comics.
True.
You know, like, it's easy to read because it's better done. You know, and I was thinking about this when I was reading it and what it is that makes me, reluctant's not the word, but I'm going to use it, reluctant to sort of get into manga. And it's more than just, like, it's a whole other thing that starts you down a road. I'm sure if I gave it time, I would like jazz and it would be very satisfied by it, but I can't be bothered. You know, like, I don't want to have to learn everything. I don't want to have to sort of, like, because, like, now American comics, we know them pretty well. Like, you can look at something and be like, that's good, that's not good. I have to start all over, and that scares me, I think.
I mean, I think yes and no. I mean, it's basically, at the end of the day, it's the same thing. It's just, it's comics. Comics are comics are comics. It's just, these are backwards. The ones in France are in French. And then, you know, at the end of the day, the rules are the same. It's maybe the cultural touchstones are different, like, for me not knowing Astro Boy. But at the end of the day, it's just a comic book. It's
and
just
that's
words
actually
and
something
page.
That should that should make it interesting for me.
Right.
What I'm saying to you doesn't really make sense. It's just my excuse of I don't have time to add another thing in, so that's my sort of arm's length thing with it. But basically, if somebody says, oh, you should read this book, it's great. In American comics, I have context for that.
Right.
I don't know if I'm going to go down a road I like or not in manga, but that's not a good... You know, I know that after this, there's 21st Century Boys and Monsters, the other one, by the same author. And I'm sure those are great, too. One of those is got a huge... that's a lot of books. And I've read Lone Wolf and Cub in its entirety, and I fucking loved that. I mean, I was.
Have you ever read Akira?
I don't think I finished it. I think I've read the first or second. I didn't love that. I didn't love the movie, and I didn't love the comics.
I read a little bit of it when I was in my early teens, and I don't remember. Was the American printing flipped for American audiences?
I feel like it might have been.
I don't remember reading backwards when I was 12. I think I would have remembered that.
I feel like that's the thing that would have happened then, but I do totally remember... hearing about the movie and then finally watching it and being very lost.
Right.
I don't know. It did not connect with me at all. And I watched it a couple of times because I wanted to. It looks cool as shit. The iconography of that is great.
Right.
But it didn't connect very much.
I'm just looking through this as you talk, and there's just some great haunting. I'm looking at the image of Mont Blanc with the horns or antlers or whatever they are. That page, it's very shaded. And you know, he's a robot, but it's a haunting image. It looks like a skull, the cop's wife, and then Sag's number two.
I'm fairly certain that Japanese comics weren't all that influential over American comics developing. But I'm wondering if it works the other way too. People doing this, are they familiar with
they develop in a vacuum?
Yeah. And if they do, not a full vacuum, but basically you've got two art forms, developing at the same time. And they share things, but there's other bits that they don't share. I find that really interesting. That's kind of fascinating. So I was looking here and the page turn, and there's a big, when we first meet, I don't remember the bad evil robot's name, but the pile of sort of robot parts. It's a brow 1589. It's a great page turn.
You know,
and it's just this lump on the ground, and he's sideways, and the drawing tells you every single thing that you need to know. That's an American. Sort of thing. So did that develop in a vacuum? Do they have that too? Or were they reading Kirby? Or was Kirby, I can't imagine Kirby was reading Astro Boy because he would have started in the 30s. But I just wonder about it as I'm reading it. How much language is shared and how much was just developed, in parallel?
It'd be interesting to hear from someone who's an expert.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody knows this answer.
My last observation is I love the design of North Number 2 because the head is so pop robot-y. He looks like he's got that what I'm sure is a bright red triangle on his head, and he's round sort of ears, and but a human mouth, looks like he's wearing a helmet, but then he's got this Victorian cape on. It's just such a stark difference in the way he looks. It makes him look
like a friar or something like that. It makes him look pious. I will say, if I was to generalize about anything, Japanese comics do motion better than any American comics. They just, I don't know why it is. I'm not sure, but man, they can do motion. And when those action scenes get going, they're flying.
Yeah.
And it's really impressive.
So I'll just say, again, if you're someone who's never read manga, first of all, thanks for listening to this, having never read manga.
And also, if you're somebody who's read a lot of manga, we're sorry.
Check out Pluto Volume 1. It's a terrific use of the art form, and it reads really well, and you're going to find a lot of things that are very familiar and therefore comfortable.
Yeah.
The tone's very Watchmen. There's a heavy dash of Blade Runner in here, and it's really terrific, and I'm definitely going to be eventually reading the rest of the series whenever I finish Hamilton.
And if you've come up over the years reading comics along with us, and sort of come to appreciate some of the same kind of stuff that we do, I think you'll get a lot out of this.
Yeah. Let's do ratings on Pluto. Urasawa X Tezuka, Volume 1. I'm going to go 4.5. I wanted to go 5, but like I said, I have to be authentic to my experience of reading it. And I was so bewildered by the final bit that I had to...
Are you speaking to your truth?
I don't want to lie. It's a 5-star book until the end for me, but that's just me. It's a 4.5 volume.
I'll go 4.5. It's not on its own. It's not self-contained. It's the beginning of something. So therefore, it does leave something to be desired. But on a craft level, if I was just rating that, that's 5.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm rating it as the story of part one of a 8-part series. So
yeah. Yep.
So that's Pluto or saw X Tezuka Volume 1, you can talk about that on fanboy.com. There'll be a post for that this show. You can also listen to our weekly comics podcast, The Pick of the Week Show, also at fanboy.com, and our sister show to this one, The Talksplode, in which Josh, you should interview Urasawa and Tezuka. Are they still alive?
No idea. No, the artist definitely isn't.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah, no.
Josh interviews comic creators, so that's where you can find that show at ifanboy.com. All of our shows are there. And again, this was unlocked by the patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy. There are more shows to unlock if you go check it out. Our next stretch goal is a G.I. Joe show, if you want to hear that. We don't have any time to make it, but we'll do it if we are called upon to do so. So, until 2 months from now, we don't know what we're going to be doing, although I have a nomination, which I'll talk to you about, Josh, off the show. But
don't give me another assignment quite yet.
So, until then, I am Connor.
And I did a whole book that didn't have Dave Lincoln in it, and I'm a little bummed, but I'm Josh. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.